Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. And before we introduce our guests, I would like to say happy 41st anniversary to my sweetheart. Happy anniversary, love.
Thank you. Happy anniversary, Diana. Can you believe we met in 1976?
Yes.
It's a long time ago.
Long time ago. And back to our guests. Tonight in studio, we have Dr. Venus Maher, chiropractor and singer extraordinaire. Hello,
Venus. Happy to be here. Thank you, Di.
Besides having her own practice, Venus is the musical director of
Sonoma County Threshold Choir.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Venus.
Thank you.
And what is the Threshold Choir, you might ask? Well, stick around for the answers. We are looking very forward to getting to know Venus a little bit better and how she weaves her professional life with her musical life. But first, here's news and events with Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
I'd love to change the world.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of December 2nd, 2018. The Bay Area Reporter reported this week that Costa Rica is poised to become the first Central American country to legalize same-sex marriage. On November 14th, Costa Rica's Constitutional Court formally ordered the country's lawmakers to extend marriage rights to same-sex couples. The court action paves the way for same-sex marriage to be legal in 18 months after it's published in the official Gazette next week. Same-sex weddings could begin as early as May 2020. Margarita Salas, a Costa Rican LGBTQI activist who previously ran for the country's National Assembly, called the ruling a fundamental win for LGBT rights. President Carlos Alvarado Quesada, who took office in May, ran with same-sex marriage as one of his major campaign platforms. The ruling has been 11 months in the making, and it follows a landmark decision by the International American Court of Human Rights, located in Costa Rica's capital city of San Jose. The court ordered Costa Rica and other Latin American and Caribbean countries to legalize same-sex marriage and transgender rights if they haven't already done so. And in contrast, also last week, voters in Taiwan rejected same-sex marriage in a referendum. LGBTQ couples in that country hoped that their island would have been the first in Asia to let same-sex couples marry and to share child custody and insurance benefits. And here in the U.S., LGBTQ Nation reports that a Colorado elementary school is under fire from conservatives who are upset about a scheduled presentation focusing on inclusivity and compassion. The school is hosting a performance of a play put on by Phoenix, a transgender choir in Colorado. The play is called Raven's Truth and features a raven that is misidentified by other animals. The animals, in turn, are taught to accept a raven for who they are. Randy Barber, who's the chief communication officer for the school district, told CBS, quote, "This is fairly typical in the Boulder Valley School District to have our students learn about inclusivity and about compassion to other people and their differences." A person identified only as a parent spoke out against the videos and their performance, saying, quote, "This goes beyond a simple message of tolerance and acceptance," end quote. And here locally, it was 40 years ago last Tuesday that San Francisco was rocked by the assassination of Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk. The person responsible was former San Francisco Supervisor Dan White. After his release from prison just 5 years after his conviction for manslaughter, White told the lead homicide inspector from the San Francisco Police Department, Frank Falzone, that he went to City Hall that day intending to kill not only George Moscone and Harvey Milk, but another supervisor, Carol Ruth Silver, as well as then member of the California State Assembly and future San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown. White committed suicide 2 years after his release from prison. For a calendar of LGBT events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
But I don't know what to do.
In And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan, and I'm Sheridan. And in studio, we have Dr. Venus Maher, chiropractor and musician. Venus, so good of you to join us.
I'm very happy to be here.
So, Venus, tell us a little bit more about your musicianship, about your practice, so they can kind of get a feel for you before we get deep and down into personal stuff.
Sounds good.
Okay.
So I think for me, music and healing just naturally fit together. There is a synergy to getting out of the way and letting things come through. And I began singing as a child, started writing songs when I was 10, with a friend. He was Joe, one of the first gay men I knew. And just coming out at 16 and I was 10, and Venus, so we called ourselves Jovius.
Aww.
And we sang and wrote songs about leaving the city, and we were part of this hippie tribe, and that was the first songwriting. At 13, I had a teacher who just rocked it. He gave us 9 chords and said on guitar and said, you can write songs, and we believed him, so we did. And I've written over 200 songs. Songwriting comes naturally to me, and I bring it to my chiropractic practice in a very sensitive way. Some people never hear a song because that's not what they need. Other people say, you know, my neck only moves when you sing to me. So I bring the songs as appropriate and, you know, I'll sense into it. This person needs quiet. This person needs listening. This person needs song. So, and I'll ask, sometimes a song is just so healing for the situation. So I'm healing with my hands, healing by silence and healing with song.
Mm-hmm.
And then Threshold Choir, we're going to talk about that. Uh-huh. But when my dad died, I went to Petaluma Hospice. And across the room 12 years ago, there was the Threshold Choir. And my heart just almost leapt out of me and moved across the room and went, that's me. I want to do that. Mm. So that's when it began.
Can you tell us, what is Threshold Choir? What was it that attracted you to it? And why are you part of it now?
I love this question. Threshold Choir began 18 years ago with one woman, Kate Munger, singing for a friend who was dying. And she began with her heart singing one song at his bedside. And from there, she'd already been sharing singing circles. She came and brought it to circle after circle after circle. And she began a movement of singing at bedsides of the dying. We have now grown to over 200 choirs with over 2,000 members worldwide. It's international. It's a nonprofit. It is a movement. There are others who sing at bedsides as well, but Threshold is one of the largest of that movement. We sing with just a few quiet voices, you know, 2 or 3 at a bedside. Ideal is 3 because we have 3-part harmony. And we come in as softly and as slowly as we can possibly do. Kate says, you're always moving faster than the person in the bed. Mm. So to slow down, which is a great message for me, and to pay attention exquisitely to the energy in the room. Is there a family member? Is the person in the bed resting? Are they awake? Are they drifting away? What's needed? We have over 400 songs to choose from, and we will then, there's usually an anchor, one person who leads, and maybe 2 who follow. We'll pick a song that is something like, you are not alone, I am here beside you. You are not alone, I am here now. And then the harmonies begin. And so the songs are we call them kindness made audible. That's what we do.
Mm.
And it feeds my heart to be there in that way.
Wow. I mean, the way you're speaking about it, I mean, I'm really touched by it. But also just imagining the people who are dying, just to hear those soft words, I'm not alone,
yeah.
You know, to feel not alone.
It's really important when there's no family there. Mm-hmm. It's also precious when there is family there because they join us and we create a circle. Nobody should die alone. And many people, even when they have family, nobody knows often how to be with that process. So it's giving something, kind of a bed for feelings. Often people will, in the bed or beside the bed, will tear up. It's a very powerful, gentle practice.
do most of the volunteers, because it's a volunteer position.
Yes.
Most of people come because they love singing, probably both, mm-hmm. or they have had people who've passed away or...
Yeah. My experience, I've been the director, I've been involved for 12 years and director of our local choir for 3 years. And most people who come have both, as you said, a love of singing. And if you're interested, those listeners, if you want to come sing with us, we just ask you can, you know, bring your heart, carry a tune and hold your part and then blend together so that we become one lullaby voice at bedside. That's our goal, is to blend, to be one as much as possible.
Can you say that again? Bring your heart, carry a tune,
hold your part and blend. And so that piece, people often come, they can sing, they love to sing. And the second is that, yes, there's often an experience of someone they love died, and they had often a profound experience at bedside. Not always. Some people come open, but there's certainly many who've said, you know, my mother or father died, and I was there, and I would love to be there for others. Some come and go, I don't know, I just want to try it. And then as they listen to the stories of what we experience, they're like, oh, yes, I want to do this.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say that it doesn't have to be just people dying to be involved. Yeah. I mean, as far as receiving, because you have this special thing, and you could talk about that happens at Kaiser in Santa,
yes,
Rosa. And I was able to be there to sit in the center and experience. I mean, it was just really profound for me. And, you know, if you're dealing with pain, and I was dealing with pain with my knee. And so it was just so soothing and medicinal or whatever, you know. It just felt, you know, it hit hard at home.
Yeah, song is medicine. You said that, the medicinal quality. So we do a gift of song, also called a song bath, once a month. This month's been canceled for Thanksgiving, but in general, the third Wednesday of the month at Kaiser at 7 o'clock, downstairs across from the cafeteria, there's a gift of song, and anyone can come for free, and we sing for all of us who have thresholds and pain and places that want love and healing. It's not just healing, it's that sense of resilience and strength and remembering who we are, and that's a gift to all, not only those on the beginning or end of life. We also sing for newborns, but primarily the end of life.
Mm.
Also, we have a program where we're singing at Kaiser and also some retirement homes, but primarily it's end of life. But Kaiser, we sing, 15 singers sing, everyone's devoted 4 hours a month, and we go in and sing. The chaplain gives us a list, and we sing for 4, 6, 8 people. We go around and sing at their bedsides, and that's really powerful. So someone might have just had surgery, or they're getting ready to go home, or so we tailor the songs to their needs, mm-hmm. and that's a powerful experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I lead that twice a month for my group, and there's other groups. Mm-hmm. It's evolving, it's growing. We also sang at the shelters after the fires here last year, and we sing when we're called to sing, mm-hmm. But we began and we end with threshold of life, because that's our primary calling. As a choir.
What do you mean? Is that a song called Threshold of Life?
No, that's our calling as the primary purpose of Threshold Choir is to sing at the thresholds of life. And we've also expanded into the song baths for anyone, you know, like third Wednesday.
So you said we begin and we end with... So I couldn't quite understand what you meant.
So that when I come back to a purpose as the director of our choir, I say, where do we want to put our energy? And our primary song, it is for those on the threshold, which is primarily that dying. It can be newborns. We don't sing during birth, but for newborns after. And the song bath is an additional gift to the community.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, you said earlier when you were talking to Diana, you said you have over 400 songs.
Threshold Choir does, yeah. I
yes.
have over 200 personally, but Threshold Choir has
yes.
over 400.
400 songs. So my question is this. So Diana and I were at the song bath, mm-hmm. and I'm a musician, so I know what goes on behind the scenes, and nobody had any music. Everybody has it all memorized. So my question is, do you have all 400 songs memorized? That's my question.
That would be a no. When someone joins, we ask them to learn the 20-plus core songs. So it's much more manageable, because I can hear people out there going, I can't do 400. So 200 is probably in my brain somewhere, maybe a little more, but I've been doing this 12 years. Kay, who was the director before me, she may have more. I don't know what she's got in there. A lot of them are short and chant-like, but they're, you know, when I go in, I carry a Threshold Choir book. I don't look at it much, but I have it there. I may have a highlights book so that if I go, oh, there's a perfect song, that one about I Bow to Your Magic, and I just want to look it up and take a sneak peek, you know, I have it. We are gifted by many of the songs were written by Threshold Choir members. Some are traditional, like Dona Nobis Pacem, but many times we're called to write a song. So, for instance, I'll sing you one now. This was, we sang for a choir member's aunt for many months before she died, and then we sang at her memorial, her celebration of life. And during the memorial, her nephew said, Aunt Nancy is not gone because she still lives. Love never dies. And so I went, oh, there's this, I got to write that. So before I got home, I pulled the car over and I wrote this. It's called Love Never Dies. I can still feel you. Your love lives on. I can still feel you. For love never dies. I can still feel you. Your love lives on. I can still feel you. For love never dies. I'm grieving that you're gone, but I'm grateful for every moment, every hour, every day we had. I'm grieving that you're gone, but I'm grateful for every day we had. I can still feel you. And it goes on.
Wow.
Beautiful.
It's almost like when you were talking earlier, I just got chill bumps. It's when you were talking earlier and you were talking about writing songs when you met your teacher at 13, I mean, who would have thought that as an adult woman, you bring that skill into something so amazing? I mean, wow, someone says something and you go and you pull over and you write it. And then you write all the harmonies as well, I'm sure.
Actually, I'm a great melody writer. I can just, melodies come to me, but I don't grab the harmony. So my friends can pull a harmony and I'm like, oh, that's good. You know, so that song lends itself to harmony, but I hear the melody so strong. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then I lean on other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do a lot in Threshold Choir. We notice the gifts. There's so many beautiful gifts. And how do we hold that? You know, this one can hold a low harmony and she gives it that bass. And this one does is those soprano notes that just touch your heart and hold the middle, and it's just a beautiful thing.
Mm.
It's an honor to be part of. You know, someone asked me recently, they said, do you pay a price? Is there a cost? Does it take something away from you to be at a bedside, to be near death? Mm. And honestly, there are times it's hard when people are in pain or they're young or they're not ready to die. That's hard for me. As a recovering codependent, I have to like take a breath, you know, hold on to the sister next to me and sit back. But I honestly believe that doing this adds to me so much. So people are always saying, thank you for being an angel and coming. And I get more than I give. And what I get is life is precious. Live it fully every day. You don't know if you got more than today. Mm. I don't know. So I'm really gifted with being present more. Next, I'm so grateful. When I'm at bedside, I often think there is no place else I'd rather be.
Mm.
No place. At that moment, not making love, not on vacation. I want to be right there because I'm part of something incredibly unique and a treasure of singing where it touches hearts, touches souls, brings us all into the room, and you can feel there's a sense of quiet. There was one man we were called, and they said, again, he had hours, and as we were there, the two family members started singing with us. The hospice nurse came in, and she knelt beside the girlfriend who put her arm on her. The doctor came in. I finished the song we were on, and I turned because normally you give presence to the doctor at that point, and he said, oh, no, what you're doing is more important than anything I can do right now. And he stayed for 20 minutes, and we all sang. The man passed that night. We had, everyone in there was crying. And sometimes, you know, you're crying and singing. once in a while, the singer will drop out and they come back in. They just quietly, because our job is not to take attention to us, but to be present for the people, the person in the bed, the loved ones. And to be in that moment is a gift that is immeasurable. It's priceless.
Because that is one of my questions. When I play flute and I start to cry, I can't play anymore. I literally can't play, so I can't look. Mm-hmm. Right? As a musician, I can't look at whatever's making me cry so that I can continue providing the music. So how do you do that when you're crying, mm-hmm. when you're touched? What do you do, Venus, as mm-hmm. as your own singer in your yeah. own body?
Well, you said one of the things I do sometimes is close my eyes. But I don't do that. If the person in the bed is looking at me, mm-hmm. I don't break contact. It's if they look away, I look away. If they look towards, I look towards. I'm going to give them the space they need and the contact they need. We also have an agreement not to touch, not to initiate touch. But if they put their hand out, I put my hand in theirs. So when I start to cry, it helps to have three singers. I remember one time in intensive care, we were singing for someone, and it was very emotional. The family was crying. And I heard, I was able to hold it for a little while, and I heard the one on my left drop out, and two of us, there was four of us, luckily, three of us held it. And then I choked up, because he looked a lot like my dad, and it just brought that up. And she came back in, and there were three, and I dropped out. And then the one on the right dropped out, but somehow we held three. So closing eyes, taking a breath, focusing on the lyrics of the song. If I'm singing, may peace be with you, I can focus on that and remember. Because it's a wave of grief coming through for me. And I can remember, oh, I'm singing about peace and I'm bringing peace. And that's in me to bring. And now I'm back in the song.
So before the crying question, I was tapping into calling. You manifesting your calling. It seems deeper than, I mean, you took it over. You take this over making love and all of those other things and food and all the other things that most people like to do. So the way you were speaking about it, Venus, it just it's like it's bigger than you and us. It's so speak to the piece about calling and you manifesting that calling.
I feel like music is like that for me. I know for many, but there's when I feel most alive, and I do like to make love and eat, by the way. but when I feel most alive, I feel like I am a conduit, an opening. I feel it in being a chiropractor. I feel it when I'm writing a song. I feel it when I'm singing at a bedside. I feel it when I'm doing art and it's, you know, silk painting, it's coming through. It's like the more I can open the channel, the more something comes through me, whether you call it spirit or God or creativity or love. And in the best of bedsides, there's a sense of being a holy instrument. And that sounds a little pretentious, but something like an instrument of love, something where I'm guided and I'm not an ego and it's not about Venus or any one person. It's about how can we be here with pure sound in a way that is love made audible, kindness made audible. And then the thought ends and it's just being. The sound carries, there's a wave, and then you can feel. One time I was at a bedside, and again, sometimes we sing for, you know, once a week for a year or 2 years, so it's not always end of life. But this one, I was at a bedside, the mother was close to going, and there were two sisters, and I kept getting this song about dancing that I thought was, my brain said, inappropriate for, you know, it just was like, I kept trying to push it away. But I've learned as an anchor, pay attention. So after the song we were singing and that song came again, I asked the daughter, did your mom like to dance? And she said, oh, mom loved to dance, but dad had two left feet. And he said he tried taking dance lessons from Miss Jenny. He never got it. He told her he died a couple years before. And he said, honey, I'm going to learn how to dance in heaven, and I will be there when you come to dance with you. And I said, I have this song for your mother. And we sang. I've been waiting all the day long to see the stars in your eyes. My love, excuse me, I'm now joking up. My love, come dance with me now. See how the evening flies. And as you sleep, my dear, know that I'll be near to hold you when you arise. And it was the perfect song for their mother. It was actually written for a child, but it was the perfect song. And so we're guided. So the answer to your question is, get out of the way, let it come through, even if the brain doesn't understand.
Wow. Thank you for that. So I'm going to shift a little. I want to know, why chiropractic versus all the other professions? I mean, what's the connection there? And also, we want to move to your artsy, your creative, your paintings and your silk screen. You're so talented, Venus. Wow.
It's so much fun to create. So chiropractic, I was lucky. I hurt my back. It wasn't like I got hurt, but I hurt my back on a Christmas tree farm when I was 15, trying to keep up with the guys. And I went to a woman chiropractor and she helped me. So that was my initiation to, oh, here's something wonderful that women do. And then I was part of the hippie tribes and then the lesbian communes and finally realized about 17, wait a minute, I dropped out and joined the dropouts before I ever joined in. Wait a minute. I want to go back and create something with my life. I want to be of service. I didn't know what, and I wanted to make a living. So I took a class called Jin Shin, where you do points that release headaches and neck pain. And I remember watching people get off the table with this beautiful smile going, my headache's gone. Oh, I can turn my neck just from the release work. And I went, I want to be a healer. And I looked at everything that I could see alternatively. And I said, oh, I want to be a chiropractor. But it's too long, too much money. Can't do that. Didn't have any schooling, didn't have any money. Went around, looked at other things. And I circled back and said, I want to be a chiropractor. I will find the money. I will find the way. And I did.
And your practice is in Roanoke Park?
Yes, I'm near the DoubleTree Hotel, and I've been in Roanoke Park for almost 30 years, that location for four.
Do you have a website that you can give?
I do. It's my name, maherchiro.com. My name, the first five letters of chiropractic.com. And you can see a little video and pictures of the clinic and such.
Well, this is the perfect time to take a break for our music break, and we will be playing one of Venus's songs that are on her CD, so stay tuned for that. And then when we come back, we're going to get to all the other things that you had mentioned, Diana, the art and everything else, Venus, that you're involved in and helping this world be a better place. So we thank you so much, and we'll be back in a couple minutes for everyone.
My mama 3 weeks before she died, I said, Mama, how do you feel about dying? She said, it seems like a gateway to me, gateway to freedom, freedom from this body which has served me well. I asked my mama 3 weeks before she died, I said, Mama, what have you learned about living? She said, it's all about love to me. Starts with myself, then moves out to others as fully as heart will allow. I asked my mama 3 weeks before she died, I said, Mama, tell me about how you love me. She said, I love you endlessly, child and woman, daughter of my heart. I love you endlessly.
Daughter of my heart, I love
And if you've just joined us, this is Living Proof on KRCB Outbeat Radio. And we are in studio with Venus Maher. And that was a beautiful song. Thank you so much. Oh, the CD is so beautiful. And we're going to tell people how they can get a copy of the CD at the end of the show. So right before we left, you had kind of given us a little hint about art. And Diana had asked you some questions about art. So can you talk to us a little bit about your silk painting?
As much as song just thrills me, so does color. And I love saturated, bright, beautiful colors blending together. One of the greatest mediums is silk, because when I touch the brush to the silk, the color spreads until it hits a edge or a resist line, or until it blends into another color. So I play with form and color until my heart sings watching it. It's absolutely part of me. I'm also a writer. And so what happens for me is, I loved when I heard the word Renaissance woman. I was like, oh, thank God. I'm not just crazy because I have so many things I love. I'm a Renaissance woman, which means creativity comes in many forms. Mm. It's the same energy that sings, that writes, that does silk paint, that does photography. And so I have to take, my job is to focus the lens and bring it in narrow so I can create things like a song or the book I'm writing or the silk painting, and say, my focus right now is this, perfecting these five songs or whatever that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. You do paint too, right? Like,
it's, yeah.
Is it just with silk screening or is
no,
it?
It's silk painting.
Painting. Okay.
And then there's also, I do mixed media, you know, so much fun with color.
Wow. And we heard you sneak in photography too.
Oh, and sneak in that you're writing a book.
No, a writer too. I mean, come on, woman. Creator blessed you with a lot of talents, honey.
The challenge is finishing things.
So tell us a little bit about your growing up and your coming out story and who you were as a child and when you knew you were a lesbian. Tell us a little bit about Venus.
That's the fun stuff. I was born with a lot of love. And there was abuse that went on from 0 to 9. And it's part of what formed me, because I know what suffering is. And I was determined, it's part of my doctorhood. I love helping suffering get relieved. And so because I've suffered, I notice it. I have those antennae that go, oh, place for compassion. My job is to stay respectful that that person's on a path, that they may need to be with what they're going through longer. It may not be time to let that go right now. My job is to respect that they are whole, even when it doesn't look that way. So my growing up fashioned who I am creatively and compassionately. My mom kicked my dad out at 9, and then she invited the hippie communes in to the house that she's renting from my aunt. My aunt didn't know. We now were a complete and utter commune. And it was a wild time. It was a real wild time. It was 1969, San Francisco. She said, let's see, you're 11, so a quarter tab of mescaline should be just about right. And she would just, I think about it now as a mother, and I'm just horrified. But she really thought it was okay. I'm lucky I got through that. My drug history is about 11 to 13, and I went, I don't like this, so I stopped. And then she kept evolving, and she joined a lesbian commune, and I went to visit her. She'd left, which was really hard, when I was 13. And that was part of the challenge growing up, too. When I went to visit her at 15, I went, oh, there's such a thing as a tribe of women. And one summer I spent with her at 14 and a half, we went to 3 women's festivals. And my eyes got big, and I looked around and I went, oh, I didn't know what the songs and movies were all about. I tried dating boys, didn't feel a thing. And that summer was just worship from afar. Oh, look at her. Oh, my God. Look at her. It was this one woman tree planter. Oh, my gosh. Anyway.
You were 15?
I was 14 and a half.
14? Oh, wow. Okay.
So I went back to school and said, okay, I'm a lesbian. I haven't done anything about it yet, but I'm a lesbian. That Christmas Eve, I came back to visit, and we listened to Lavender Jane straight through 3 times. And I came out on Christmas break with this wonderful woman. Haven't looked back since. This is who I am. It was beautiful.
So when your mom left when you were 13, who did you live with? Other folks in the commune? Or
she moved me from the city. We had a country commune, but it was way out in the sticks in Covelo. So she moved me to Ukiah. We went 13 miles out of dirt road. Ooh. And you had to pump the water by hand like Laura Ingalls Wilder. I'm 13, remember? Like, are you kidding me? And I didn't say it that clean. Took the water, put it on the stove, heat it up, put it in the tin pail and take a bath. I'm 13. I'm like, that's not okay. But we were there for a month, and then she came to the school and said, I'm going to move to the commune out in the country. There's no kids your age. There's no school. I've arranged for you to stay with people, and I'll send food stamps and money. And bless her heart, it took me till she died to fully forgive that moment and get it. She died 21 years ago, and I sat at her bedside and said, Mom, that was one of the hardest parts of my life. And she said, I thought I gave you a choice. I said, no, that wasn't a choice. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, I got she was doing the best she could, mm-hmm. even though it was not what I needed. Mm-hmm. So it was my path to grow up fast, but it was hard. So that's one of those defining moments for me that I've worked with over and over in mm-hmm. therapy. I love therapists because you get to dive in and find what's there and go, oh. One of the things for me was I didn't get to push away the way most teenagers do. You be the rock and I'll be the one acting out, because if the rock leaves, you can't push out. You can't separate, individuate, because the families I was staying with didn't have that commitment. Like, we're here no matter what. Mm-hmm. So I've had to learn to do that through the years.
Well, and, very touching. Yeah. And I'm sure it's, you know, helped, quote unquote, you be the woman you are now. Mm-hmm. When you talked earlier of the suffering that you experienced, and it's helped you be more compassionate toward people who are mm-hmm. suffering.
I think that I had to face that when my son, I have a wonderful son who's 23, when he hit that age at 13, I just wanted to love him and let him know I was there. And I once said, you know, Aaron, you know I love you. He said, Mom, how could I not know that? So I was trying to be the mother I needed instead of the mother he needed. Mm-hmm. And that was my work, is to, mm-hmm. oh, you're a different person. You've got what you need. We've given it to you. So
how was it for you when you talked earlier about not having a mom to push against when you were trying to individuate? So when Aaron tried to individuate and he was pushing against you, how did you handle that, not having a role model?
I hated it. I took it personally. Everyone said, don't take it personally. I didn't like it. And someone told me once, they said, the closer you are, the farther they have to push back. And I said, I am just in trouble here, because we were very close. I was single mom for some early years, and then I wasn't. I had a wonderful co-parent, but I really realized that he has to push back far. So my work was to go back into therapy and do the work on my teenager, mm-hmm. And then to give him the tools he needed. And he's got them. I actually have a song I want to share. I wanted to write a song for my son his whole life, and it was so important. I couldn't write anything because it was too big. So it took till he went off to college to write this song.
All right.
You are on a journey uniquely your own, full of choices and challenges now that you are grown. You have a compass, an internal guide that tells you when to forge ahead, when to step aside. So trust in that compass known as your heart and soul. Whatever comes, you have within all you need to know. When you were a baby, I made the choices. I held you close and rocked you to sleep. When you awoke, you looked to me, eager to see what daylight would bring. When you were a small child, I gave you choices, milk or juice, now or later. First you walked, then you ran away, and then towards testing your wings. You are on a journey, uniquely your own, full of choices and challenges, now that you are grown. You have a compass, an internal guide, that tells you when to forge ahead, and when to step aside. So trust in that compass, known as your heart and soul. Whatever comes, you have within all you need to know. When you were a teen, you made more choices. I stood by as your advisor, watching you fly, holding my breath, biting my tongue as you dipped and soared. Now you are a man, you make your own choices. I love you from here as you go on. Go where you go, do what you do, I'll always be here loving you.
Wow.
When he went off to college, I said, Aaron, I'd like to do a little gratitude ritual. I said, Mom, I don't need that. I said, I know, but I do. So would you do it for me? And I figured 10 minutes of gratitudes. We spent 45 minutes in a critique of his childhood, motherhood, everything. And he said, you know, Mom, I'm not the kind of guy who needs to do things to get attention because you and my other moms love me unconditionally. And so I know, I just, you know, and so he has that compass. And that was the gift that I've had to work for my compass. And I think we made it easier for him, for my son, to have his own internal guidance system and trust it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you modeled how you do this dance, you know?
Yeah.
Getting to know self. Beautiful. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, it sounds like you just validated who he was as his own person, like his whole personhood, his whole childhood. I mean, he sounds like he left for college with a very full sense of who he was because you saw that in him.
Yeah, I always, I used to tell him, unless it's health and safety, we can negotiate. Health and safety, I'm going to decide because I've got some experience. But otherwise, yeah, he's a whole person who came in with his own directional guide and to learn to trust it. And I would tell him, so, you know, what is it that you think should happen here? You know, and sometimes even if, you know, he's rarely in trouble, but I got in trouble, I said, okay, so what do you think the consequence should be? One time he said, you're the mom, you decide. But really just basically he's always been an easy guy, made parenthood easy. But giving him the respect, each one of us deserves respect no matter what size we are, no matter what age or color or anything. We deserve respect for that essence of us. And that's what we gave him.
Was he okay with two moms?
Four moms. Four moms. Because I was with one of his moms until he was two. We broke up. And then we both got new partners when he was five. So he's always had four moms. And yes, he was. I kept waiting for that moment when he'd say, could you just cool it? Could you just pretend you're not you? Could you just not be out? And it never came. And he's always been tall and handsome and, you know, athletic. And he said, Mom, really, who's going to tease me? And also, he said, it's a non-issue for my generation, at least here in California and Sebastopol and Mona Park. He just said, it's a non-issue. And I was always glad that that was true for him.
Mm-hmm. So, Venus, you are only child? No.
I'm oldest of three or five. Three with mom and dad and five when you count. My dad has had five kids with three women. So, yeah, I'm the oldest. I'm definitely firstborn.
Okay. Because you didn't say much about your father. So how's he and other relatives with you being who you are?
Both my mother and father are gone, so was troubled. So I... You know, he said, you're following your mother and you're being like your mother. And he was a little troubled by it. But basically, and my other relatives were pretty good. You know, 1975 was a great time to come out because there was such a wave of feminism and women's community and in the country. And I felt so supported. Like, I didn't get much shaming anywhere, including from my family. I'm not touching on Dad too much because that's a whole other... Mm-hmm. subject, and I've done a lot of work about that, but it wasn't about, you know, my coming out. It was just the challenges of alcohol and pain. And I know it's generational pain that there's a couple songs for that. We'll just sing another time. But generational pain, my job is to stop that generational pain, and I have as a mother. I have not passed that on.
Congratulations.
Yes, that break the cycle.
That's really hard work.
Yeah.
So hats off to you for all of your hard work. And that's just going to help you be more available to others, yeah?
Yeah.
When you get all your stuff cleaned up and understood and worked through. And
yeah, it's something I've been really working with is for many years I felt like I had an accident a couple of years ago, someone, Man Red Light, hit me, and it's been, I've been in chronic pain since, and I don't talk about it a lot because as a doctor, I'm not going to talk about my pain. As a choir leader, I'm not going to, you know, but it's also informed me in another level of compassion. And it's also, I asked in therapy, what's the meaning of this? And it said, it's time to teach what you've been learning. Because for years I thought, I'm the newbie. I'm still learning. I'm still growing. I'm young. And I'm going to be 60 next year. And at some point you got to say, I'm not new and I'm not young and I've got something to share. So the lesson I heard was, the message I heard was, it's time to teach. And so I've started LifeSpark, which is taking lessons I've learned mainly from my teachers, Gay and Katie Hendricks, and also from life, and taking those to whoever needs them in my life, whether it be my patients, clients who come for private counseling classes. I started teaching. I taught self-love and intimacy recently at a festival, and it's been such a joy. I went and got these skills for my own life and in relationship I was in. And it's been such a joy to share them and to see, for instance, the one of the things I've been working with is there's the hero, victim, villain triangle. And I like to play the hero in the past. And when my teacher, Katie, said, if you're playing hero, you require a victim. I said, oh, shoot. Ah, I don't like that. She said, and actually the hero keeps the triangle going a lot. So I've been looking in my life at where do I play hero and how can I put that role down? How can I not require someone who needs rescuing around me? Because like the majority of my patients are incredible, wonderful people who take responsibility for their health, and we're equals. I've got something to bring to them, and they bring their vital interest in being well, and it works really well. If I'm into playing hero, I can draw someone who's thinking, you're going to fix me. And that's a problem because honestly, nobody fixes anyone. In chiropractic, we remove interference to the nervous system and the body heals itself. In LifeSpark, bring tools, people use them and they work or they don't. In song, you bring it and hearts open or they don't. So it's not hero that does it. It's compassionate witness. It's compassionate healer. It's the place where you show up, get out of the way, and let's see what wants to come through.
Mm-hmm. That sounds beautiful. Boy, you're involved in so much.
I know, the hero.
At the end of the show, which is coming up soon, we're going to go over all the information for people if they want to contact you for things you're involved in. I'm interested in the song because we've had such a tragedy in this last year now, this year with the Butte Fire. And I know you've written a song about the fires. Yeah. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that song and then maybe sing it for us.
Thank you. Last year, when we went through what was the worst fire ever in California and is now not the worst because of what's going on, I and the 50 people on the hill with one exit I live on, we ran from the fire. My home was saved twice. I didn't know if it was going to be saved at moments, and I'm one of the lucky ones. My home still stands. But some of our choir members lost their homes, and we lived that. And so we went and sang in the shelters as we kind of came out of our shock and our those of us who were evacuated and trying to sort our lives out. About 5 days later, we went to the shelters and we sang, 10 of us sang in one shelter, and then 6 of us went on to another shelter, and we sang for 4 hours. We sang until we didn't have much voice left. And the last person we sang for, we said, do you know if you have a home? And she said, my home is gone. And I got one of the cats, but the other cat ran. And I said, where did you live? And she said, my street. She's the person whose home, or the street that leads to my street. She's the person whose home burned closest to my home. And we just held each other and cried. And I left that shelter again going, what can my heart say? There's nothing, there's no words good enough. Mm. You know, for those of us who don't know if the home is standing, don't know if a loved one is still alive. And so I wrote this song that day, the next couple of days. And I want to dedicate this to the people who are going through that in the Camp Fire, the Butte Fire, all around Paradise and beyond, and also Southern California, and the ones in our counties and Napa counties who are still trying to put their lives back together. What can my heart say to your heart as the fires do burn? What can my heart say to your heart? We are two hearts reaching. Are your loved ones safe, my friend? Does your home still stand? Do you need anything that I can give? We are two hearts reaching. What can my heart say to your heart as they fight the fires down? What can my heart say to your heart? We are two hearts reaching. You are not alone, my friend. My heart grieves with you, and many hearts are reaching out towards us. We are many hearts reaching. What can my heart say to your heart as they fight the fires down? What can my heart say to your heart? We are many hearts reaching. My tears fall with your tears. As we share these sorrows, my heart reaches for your heart. We are many hearts reaching. What can my heart say to your heart as the fires go out? What can my heart say to your heart? We are many hearts reaching. We are many, 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 many hearts reaching.
Thank you for that, Venus. Wow. Beautiful.
Send the song out to each of you. You are not alone. There are many hearts reaching, many hands reaching. We love you.
I think this is a really right time for you to mention your concert, because I think your 200 songs, at least a few of them, need to be shared with other people. Thank you so much for that. It's beautiful.
So these songs that keep pouring through want to be shared, and it's actually false humility not to share them. So I've created, with encouragement from my friends, from you all, a concert on March 30th at the Glazier Center that's going to be a benefit for Threshold Choir, and it's going to be a place to come, let your heart be held, loved, supported, uplifted in song. There'll be many, many songs that I've written, all songs I've written. It won't be all 200, I promise. And there's going to be musicians joining me on many levels. We're still creating exactly what that looks like. I'm also going to be projecting photographs and silk paintings so that people can have the color with the sound. It's going to be that multimedia place to come remember who you are.
Wow.
Yahoo!
Thank you. And you know what? Sad to say, but time is running out, and you've just been so lovely, Venus. And we like to leave the audience with some advice. And mean, you have tons of advice. We've heard it all for the last 50 so minutes. Yeah. But if there's just one or two things that's pressing that you want to share, please.
You're going to be afraid. Do it anyway. And love, even when it's scary. Love, even when you're not sure, because love is the path. Love is the way. Love is the thing that has carried me through everything and will carry me right to death and beyond. Love and song. So feel the fear, do it anyway, and love anyway.
That's so beautiful. And again, we'd like just to say what your website is in case people want to contact you regarding your CD, the concert, Life Spark, Threshold Choir. Could you give that information one more time?
Yes. If you need to reach me, you can find me at maherchiro.com. That's maherchiro.com. And you can call my work number at 792-0202.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
love. Wonderful.
It was a joy to be here. Truly an honor.
And remember, like Venus, you too can be living proof that through sharing your story, you can support others in being free and living their lives authentically. It's another way to help the world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we'll be back next month.
Good night.
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel
Next Sunday night for Outbeat Music. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB FM Radio 91. Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB FM comes from listeners and from The Bohemian, announcing the annual Best of Sonoma and Napa Readers Poll. Online voting takes place now through December 31st. Participate at bohemian.com. And from Community Market, Sonoma County's only worker-run, not-for-profit, natural and organic foods grocery store. Established in 1975, Community Market strives to carry ethical and nutritious products, with profits directed back to the community in forms of donations, discounts, and services. Community Market is located at 1899 Mendocino Avenue in Santa Rosa and at 6762 Sebastopol Avenue in Sebastopol. More information at cmnaturalfoods.com. We are Radio 91, KRCB-FM Windsor, and K215-CQ Santa Rosa. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Afropop is next.